with your stomach kind of churning, like you feel like you're going to throw up. We really go through some very intense and powerful physical sensations when we're angry. The difference between us and kids, though, is that we, because we're older and we are thinking powers are more solid, we can reflect. You can stop and say, I am aware of how my body feels when I'm angry. That's one of the core differences between adults and teenagers, because teenagers, they're not at the point, really, in their cognitive and in their intellectual development where they can say, I'm angry, my stomach feels tense. When you can think that, then you have a greater ability to do something about it. And again,
that's one of the biggest differences between adults and children, that you have this powerful physical sensation that you don't always feel that you can do something about. The other thing that I want to really, really emphasize, and this is something that's critical, is how you as an adult and you as a parent react to your child being angry is not just based on the here and now. Your child says something, it makes you angry, you react. How you react is really based on your own childhood, your own past experiences, your own relationships with your parents, with your siblings, with different relatives, with different people in your life. That is also a very, very critical element in how we end up coping with anger, because it's not a simple emotion. It's a very, very complex emotion, and it's something that really ends up transporting you back in time. You might be asking yourself, well, why is she telling us all this? What does this have to do with strategies? What it has to do with strategies is because when your teenager is angry, if you are not aware of what your trigger points are and how you end up reacting to angry situations, then you're in a way as helpless as your teenager is to just getting involved in the gut emotion without really having the time to think through and come up with a plan of how you're going to deal with these different kinds of situations. Here's another question for you. How do your children, teenagers, make you feel when they're angry with you? Anybody want to tell us? Yes.
Incompetent.
Guilty.
Sad.
Okay, sad. Why sad?
Because I feel something went wrong, that maybe I should have... Something went wrong somewhere, that I should have...
Okay, so if I could enlarge upon that a little bit, guilt and helplessness, because you feel as a parent that your role as a parent is to take care of your children and to, even in a larger way, kiss their boo-boos and make it all better and help them to be happy. And so when our children are angry, it can make you feel powerless, sad, helpless, angry, guilty. Yes.
Also frustrated because a parent wants to have the answers on how to help the child.
Right.
The parent is always looking
right.
to have the answer.
Right.
And if you don't have the phone number of who to contact,
right.
because the person cannot do everything.
This is
That's
true.
That's why there's a world.
This is true.
People in it.
This is true.
So until you get that phone number
right.
of someone that could be affected
right.
and who was affected from one person is
right.
to tell you that phone number.
But that goes through with some of the you want to do the action because it's painful for us as parents to admit that sometimes we just don't know what the heck to do, that children and teenagers especially can make you feel all of the feelings we've talked about and can make you feel totally, totally helpless.
Well,
yes.
Part of the reason they make you feel that, they basically tell you that when they're angry, they're telling
right.
you that you're
right.
not meeting their needs.
Right. But you know what? Here's a clue, and this is really, really important. I can guarantee you that what you're feeling at the moment that your teenager is angry with you, I could almost bet you that that is exactly how your teenager is feeling him or herself. So when you feel sad, anxious, guilty, powerless, helpless, that's really what your teenager is feeling. Except they're not going to come to you and say, oh, I feel so helpless, I don't know what to do. They're going to react with anger because, again, part of the teenager's normative job is to learn how to cope with their feelings, learn how to cope, learn how to make their place in society. So they can't tell you necessarily that they feel all of these things. They are going to just react, boom, boom, boom. When we talk about the job of adolescence, anybody know what's the number one job of developmentally that teenagers are supposed to be doing? Yes.
Becoming independent?
Yes. That is the number one job, which is, the fancy term, is separation and individuation, which basically means as a teenager, and it really starts around puberty, their normative job is to separate from you as the parent, develop more independent skills, so their job is to be able to leave the nest and to function independently in the real world. Now, here's a question. How do you think kids feel about that? You think it's something that they really want with open arms?
Surgery without anesthesia.
Yeah, okay, that's a good example. Yes.
I'd be terrified.
Terrified. They, 100%. 100%. Yes.
I know from my own kid, she doesn't want it. She wants to go back.
To the womb, if they could.
Right.
Right.
They don't want it.
So here's a very visual demonstration of what separation is. Here's you as the parent. Here's your child. Your child is moving like this, that's the way they should be going if we had an arrow. Except, you're like a magnet. So they're fighting, 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 resisting, resisting that pull because the desire is to go right back to you. So, and do we have any science majors here? No science majors. If you're a magnet and this is the attraction, what do you have to do to stop them from sticking together? Yeah, or you have to break the contact. You have to put a physical barrier between the home magnet and the pulling force. That is really the primary function that anger serves for the teenager, because it's a lot easier to separate from mommy and daddy if you're really mad. If you can convince yourself that your parents are sort of worthless and stupid and don't know anything and you know better and your friends know better, it's a whole lot easier to go through the process of separating from you as mommy and daddy. So again, for teenagers, they don't have the wherewithal to really tell you how they feel. Somebody here said scared to death. We call that anxiety. They are terrified of that growing up process. And it's that anxiety coupled with all of the biological changes, that upsurge in hormones that they really start going through a year before puberty, that kind of makes this big melting pot of these creatures who you look at one day and say, who are you? Where did you come from? What alien has taken over your body? Because that's how they make us feel. Okay. So, again, understanding that at the core they feel helpless and powerless really, I think, can help you as parents view their behavior in a little bit more of a thoughtful way and not just react with that real knee-jerk kind of reaction. I have a two-minute exercise that I would like to do, and it's actually very good that we happen to be in a big high school classroom because it helps us set the mood and have us go back in time. What I want you to do is try to pretend that you're a teenager and that I'm going to ask you certain questions, and just raise your hand if you've ever felt this way. As a teenager, do you remember, were you ever called a name by an older person, like a negative name? Okay. Was your dress or your physical appearance ever criticized by an adult? Your dress is too long, your hair is too long, okay? Were you ever called stupid or made to feel powerless by an adult? Okay, everybody's being very honest. Were you ever told that you're too young to understand? Okay, that's a big one. Okay, were you ever lied to by an adult? Okay, were you ever treated unfairly by your parents or by your teachers? Actually, not as many as I thought would say yes to that. Did an adult ever accuse you of doing something wrong when you really knew that you hadn't done that? Okay. And were you ever yelled at by an adult? Okay. So I think pretty much universally the purpose of that is really to kind of take you back. And I want you to really connect. That's really the purpose of this exercise, to connect with your teenagers, because connection is part of the strategies of how we're going to really help you deal with them when they're angry. One of the most basic rules, and by the way, I included This is something that's downstairs that I really encourage everybody to get up. This was put out by the Orthodox Union. There's a lot of really wonderful, wonderful articles on all different kinds of adolescent issues. And in here, I included a lot of handouts on kind of giving you summing up some of the strategies so that you can really have it at your fingertips, put it on your refrigerator, things like that. Okay. In my work with teenagers, the one thing that they tell me they cannot stand about their parents is their parents are inconsistent. That will enrage a teenager. So my number one piece of advice to you is whatever rules you're going to establish, you need to be clear about the rules. You have a right as a parent to set specific, clear guidelines and to really have certain rules and regulations that are going to work for your family. But it's really, really important that you allow your teenager to know what they are. A lot of times, what's the number one thing that kids say? That's not fair. Okay? In a teenager's world, if you tell them something on Monday and then change your mind on Tuesday, it's kind of like ex post facto. You're holding them responsible for something that they had no clue about, and it completely enrages them. On here on the board, over here on the board, I kind of gave you a little summary. This is not in any of your handouts, but it's really, these are some of the most basic guides for really dealing with teenagers. One, you have to have a lot of patience. Why is that important? One, for your own sanity, I would say, first and foremost. And the second one is because when you're patient, it gives you a minute to think before you act. Okay? If you can think before you react to the stimulus that your adolescent is throwing at you, it will give you a better chance to have a planned and thoughtful approach to what it is that they're going through. Humor helps. You know, a lot of times kids will say to me, I was just joking, or, you know, I don't understand why my parents reacted the way that they did, or why can't they just lighten up? That's a favorite one that kids will tell you. And in a way, we, as adults, we can really, really overreact sometimes to situations. So instead of us having the opportunity to kind of redirect or blow something off, we react so intensely that we ourselves end up creating kind of a conflict when maybe there wasn't a need for us to do that. So having a little bit of humor is an excellent, excellent strategy for deflecting some of the tense situations that could really come up on any given day. Notice I said humor and not sarcasm. How come? What is sarcasm? It's negative, it kills them, it's criticism, 100%. And one of the things that I hear all the time from the teenagers that I work with is, my parents are never satisfied with what I do. A lot of times in our earnest endeavors to help our kids and have them gain from all of our wonderful years of experience, we're constantly telling them what to do, how to dress, how to walk, how to talk, you know, this, that, and the other thing. We think that we're being helpful. That's not how your kids see it. They see it as you're criticizing them. You're really telling them that nothing they do is ever right. And if you're constantly experiencing that, what do you think kids are going to say?
Why bother?
Why bother? Why should I try? They're not going to be happy. A lot of times if kids, let's say, get a B in school, what do parents say in a joking way? Why didn't you get an A? Child comes home, 98 on a test. What's a favorite joking thing that parents say? What happened to the other 2 points? Okay, you think that you're being humorous. I can guarantee you, as sure as I stand here, that your teenager feels, why should I even bother? They don't even appreciate what I'm bringing home. So I'll get a 60 next time. Big deal. And let me tell you something. Teenagers have short memories for something. They don't have short memories when it comes to their feelings being hurt and to remembering all of the things that you have done to them that really ticked them off. Well, think about yourselves. Don't you remember some of the key things that your mothers and fathers did that made you really, really angry? I mean, we do. We have very, very long memories when it comes to that. The other really, really important element in dealing with your teenagers is really having logical and appropriate consequences. What do I mean by that? You ever hear the expression, let the punishment fit the crime? That's number one. And here's another one of my favorites. You don't kill a mosquito with a shotgun. Okay? What does that mean? A lot of times when our teenagers make us furious, and they really can because they spend a lot of time figuring you out, knowing what buttons to push, what numbers to dial up to get your goat, we end up becoming so incredibly angry that not only do we say things that we really regret and feel guilty about afterwards, but we give them so many harsh and kind of like over consequences that we diminish our own authority. And then what happens if you say, you know, let's say they got that 60 or 70 on a test, and we say to them, that's it, you're punished for a month, no telephone for a month. What ends up happening? You change your mind. When you calm down, you have a chance to reflect on that. You realize that that was kind of overkill, so you back down. Now, that's different from admitting when you've made a mistake, which is something that I really include in every anger management thing. If your job as a parent is to model appropriate behavior, you can underline that because that's a really, really key element. Yeah, you do want to admit when you've made a mistake. But if you have a habitual pattern as a parent of constantly imposing a consequence and then pulling away from it and backing away, you're really diminishing your own authority. And then your kids don't take you seriously. And you really then set up a pattern where they're not going to listen to you. So in your family world, you can figure out what are the consequences that are going to mean something to your child. And it could be watching television, having time on the computer, talking to their friends, going out on the weekend. There's a lot of things that you can use to, in a way, positively manipulate their behavior. But again, you want to make sure that that punishment fits the crime. The other thing, we forget this a lot of times. Can everybody see what this is? Respect. A lot of times, kids will tell me, my parents don't respect me. They don't respect my privacy. That's really a big one from kids. They don't respect my space. They don't respect my feelings. They don't like my friends. Again, it comes in all of that negativity. And again, that doesn't mean as a parent that you cannot disagree with your child. It doesn't mean that you're not going to set limits to them. But it means that you want to do it in an atmosphere of respect. Because as teachers always tell you, in order to get respect, what do you have to give? You have to give respect. And again, it's that reciprocal relationship that really sets the ground work for healthy limit setting in a family where you're really, again, trying to model proactive and positive behavior for your teenagers. Again, a lot of what you have to do as a parent, if you want to talk about strategies, having patience and thoughtful choices is really, really critical. Because, for example, if we understand that there's some biology involved in being angry, you might want to take a look at your kids and really think to yourself, do they have a pattern when they're getting angry? Anybody want to just raise their hand if they see that kind of a pattern in their kids by a show of hands? I will tell you that most kids, unless we're talking about a serious emotional disability, do not go directly from 0 to 10 on a Richter scale. Okay? If you take a minute to really, when you go home today, observe your kids, they might show you a lot of subtle signs of when they're starting to cook, when they're starting to get upset. Some kids, it might be they're more physically active, a little bit of agitation. For some kids, it might be they get a little sulky. Nothing terrible, but that might be their pattern, their particular pattern of the things that they show you when they're mad. It might be that they don't listen as well. It might be that they're withdrawn, that they go into their room. There's a lot of different ways that they can display anger. And your job as a parent, if you want to talk about strategies for dealing with anger, my advice to you is to first observe the pattern, because there is a progression of anger. And the analogy that I use with a lot of the teens that I work with, it's kind of like climbing a mountain. You know, the impetus of climbing is what pushes you to the top. And with teenagers, when they sort of get midway up that mountain, which way are they going to go? First, they have to then push up to the top. And it's only when they get to the top, which is the peak of their anger and their fury and their rage, then they go down. So part of being able to look at that progression of angry feelings in teenagers is to stop them, to redirect them, which is really not so hard to do, when they're kind of getting there. What do I mean by that? This is a really, really helpful strategy. When everybody's calm, you can sit down with your teen and you can say, you know, I've kind of noticed that when you come home from school, you get a little bit miffed, you get a little bit irritable, and then right away you start a fight with your brother or your sister. Have you noticed that? Okay, now why is that important? You're respecting them 100%. You're not yelling at them. You're pointing it out in a helpful way. But you're also teaching them to stop and think and reflect on their behavior. Then, once they do that, you can help them come up with a plan and thoughtful choices. I have a young lady in my practice. She's one of three sisters. I've seen her older sister for a number of years. It's a wonderful family to work with. Well, this middle girl, who's now 14 years old, she is a pepper pot. She has a temper. And in working with the family, one of the biggest complaints that her sisters had is that she would come off the school bus and she would be a raving lunatic. She'd walk in the door, she'd throw her books down, she'd start a fight immediately with her sisters, and within 5 minutes of being home, the mother's peaceful day was totally destroyed by these three sisters yelling and screaming and fighting and slamming doors. You get the picture. So when I met with this middle girl, one of the things we talked about, I said to her, I said, are you aware of this? And she said, yeah, I guess I am. And I said, well, what's happening? And what she was able to tell me was she had had a really stressful day at school, a lot of social issues, and that will bring me to my point right after this. And what was happening was when she would be on the bus, she'd be reflecting on how horrible her school day was, the fights, the tensions that she had with her peers. She'd come home, and who better to take out her anger on but her sisters? Because by starting a fight with them, she was also able to discharge and relieve some of her own inner tension from sort of holding it in all day. So she's basically a really nice kid. So what I said to her was, well, do you think it's really fair that you're kind of venting all of this on your siblings? No. And she didn't like the fact that she was always then getting punished by her parents for having started and instigated these fights. So what we worked out was if she was aware on the school bus that she was feeling this way, her thoughtful plan was she was going to go directly to her room and close the door and take 10 minutes to listen to music, to punch her pillow, to do jump ropes. And then when she felt that she had control over those feelings and could be a decent human being, then she would come down. The response was unbelievable, because what do you think happened? The fighting stopped, and it was really almost instantaneous. And that's the kind of thing that I'm talking about that is so easy to do, especially when you're dealing with the sibling difficulties. We were able to identify her pattern of how she was dealing with her anger, and by talking it through, and you don't need a therapist to do that, you could really do that as a parent in a non-critical, non-judgmental way, underline, underline. We were able to evaluate that pattern and then come up with a plan that was extremely effective. Now, yes?
What if you have a teenager that says everything's fine, there's no problem, she doesn't want to talk, doesn't want to
admit that she has social pressures in school.
Okay, and sometimes you have it, but what you can do then is not every youngster is going to be as insightful. So then what you can end up doing is you can say, everything else, I've noticed that when you come home from school, you seem really tense and you seem really, really upset. And then you end up having X, Y, and Z. So you're still going to point out the pattern to her. But then, and this is what I had to do with this young lady, because I just saw her last Monday, and she was sort of doing the same behaviors again, and came to me and said, but I'm not aware that I'm angry. And I said, okay, well, sometimes you might not be aware of it, but your mom certainly is. So our next plan was, which is something you can do at home, she agreed that she would accept a nonverbal cue from her mother. Her mother would raise her eyebrows and kind of like point up to the stairs. And that was our way of teaching her, hey, you might not be recognizing right now that you're taking out your frustrations on everybody else in the family, but since we don't want to go down that road again where you're going to get punished and consequences, you need to accept this cueing and go up to your room until you can come down. So that's a good strategy, because what you're doing is you're trying to make your teenager part of the solution and not just part of the problem. And that brings us to this. Can everybody read what this is? Communication. What's communication? What are we doing when we are communicating?
Listening.
Let me tell you something. Listening is actually more important in communication than talking. Okay? If you've ever worked with teenagers, they're really funny sometimes when they describe what their parents do. Talk to the hand, blah, blah, blah. You ever have kids who say this to you? Blah, 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 blah. Makes parents nuts. They'll go like this. But what are they really saying? They're saying that you're not listening to what I have to say. You're only interested in your own agenda. That is a huge complaint that teenagers have. And again, it's another one of those things that absolutely drives them crazy. Again, if you're there to help them, you need to listen to what it is they're trying to tell you. Now, with a lot of children, like what this lady said, they're not always self-aware, okay? But you can observe a lot of things about what they're trying to communicate to you through their behavior. Their behavior often will tell you a whole lot about what it is that they're experiencing. And you could say to them, and this is also a really, really good strategy, which will only work if you've already gone through the patience piece and the respect piece, which is when your child comes home and maybe she's immediately irritable and takes it out on you, boy or girl, instead of just reacting to the fact that maybe they didn't speak to you the way they should or maybe they were a little bit disrespectful, you could try saying something like, you know, you came home and you seem a little bit grumpy. I wonder if you had a hard day at school. I wonder if something didn't go so okay for you. Now, that's different than asking the question, did you have a hard day at school? Because then teenagers being teenagers, they feel compelled to say no. But you're not asking them. You're making a statement based on what it is that you are observing. That's what I call it's called getting underneath the behavior. Instead of reacting, which is up here, you're trying to get underneath that and really listen to the turmoil, the anxiety, the social pressures that they're getting into. Yes?
I do a good deal with that with my daughter.
Okay.
She will then say to me, don't psychoanalyze me, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Like that.
Okay. And you could say to her, you know, I'm not just psychoanalyzing you, but I can't help tell you what it is that I see. Okay? Because she can't, just like you can't really control what she's going to do, she can't control what it is that you're going to say. And believe me, teenagers will tell me they definitely hear more of what you have to say than you think they do. They're just not going to let you know that they hear what you're saying, because then they sort of lose face. Yes?
Hi, this sounds a little textbook, and I'm not sure what age you've been talking about, but for example, my daughter decided on her own to go to the gym every day after school because it was so stressful.
Okay.
She'd come home, she would still be stressed. I try to talk, she just goes in her room and closes the door.
Right.
There's not going to be any communication there when she's just going to put on a radio or...
How old is she? Okay, but you see, part of, again, the beginning part of what we're talking about today is that kind of separation is a very, very important part of being a teenager, that they sometimes have that need to separate themselves out from you and to have their space. I would still tell her what it is that you have to say. And by the way, a very good strategy if you're dealing sometimes when they're angry, but you can really do it if you want to communicate to them, is write them a little note. I don't know if she takes lunch or if you make her lunch still, put it on her pillow at night. For a lot of kids who are angry, for example, or for kids who are angry but are expressing it by being moody and withdrawn, which is definitely the other side of being angry, your job as a parent is to find other strategies for helping them to communicate. And really just saying, I love you, I hope you had a nice day, or, you know, how's that social thing, or, you know, how's your stress level today? That's the kind of stuff that will make a teenager feel understood and loved and connected to you. That goes back to, there's a lot of different ways to communicate. And again, not all kids can do it in the talking way. Yes, excuse me?
Even a message on a cell phone.
Great idea. Message on a cell phone, text messaging. Again, if you communicate without necessarily expecting something back from them, you're in control of that as a parent. Yes?
Communication. My son sometimes complains I ask too many questions.
Like, what do you ask?
How was the day? What happened? And about two questions, then he needs to go off by himself.
But you know what? I would still ask the questions, because if he's still answering the questions, be charged, and then they're able to be able to interact and be part of the family. So you're really just adapting that kind of a strategy. Yes, you had your hand raised.
Well, it was also regard to the communication with using the technology now. Mm-hmm. I read an article recently that said that because the kids communicate so much on the internet, when they're leaving instant messages and email, and that a great deal of the confrontation takes place with their friends mm-hmm. over there because they don't have the guts or the developmental stage
Correct.
To discuss certain things. So sometimes leaving a message, writing an email to your child. And they'll emailing back. Sometimes my daughter said she's sorry to me via the internet, obviously is easier for her right
100%.
now. 100%. So
My advice to you is whatever works, I would jump on it, and that's a wonderful, wonderful suggestion. To communicate, again, in a less direct way definitely works better for some kids. Yes?
At what point do you get to the point where the kid is coming home stressed, like that extent that they cannot speak to you, everything is coming home like this?
Mm-hmm.
At what point do you have to not give them space, but find out what type of thing is going on in that school during the day that's stressing them out like this?
Do you have any clues? Do you have any clues?
No, I mean, if I have it with my kid, I immediately go to the school and I find
okay.
out what's going on over there. And if
okay.
there's something going on, I work with the teacher
right.
to do that.
And I guess the question would be, how long a period of time, if your child comes home and your child then isolates themselves for the rest of the day, and that's a consistent pattern of behavior, then you have something that's a little bit more concerning than somebody, 100%. But I'm talking about, again, here, the realm of pretty typical teenage manifestations of anger. If, again, your child is not able to really communicate with you, a strategy is go to the school or call up other parents. We do that all the time. We say, do you have a sense of what happened? It seems like they're a little bit upset. A lot of times kids at night, when you go in to even kiss them goodnight or say goodnight, which I still encourage you to do, for whatever reason, nighttime is a time that kids let their guard down and kind of still revert back to that communicative mommy, or daddy child time where they will communicate more to you. And sometimes that's a way that you can help them figure out what it is that's going on. the social pressures that children experience in school, and it's very profound and intense for teenagers, have such a direct link to the kinds of expressions of anger that they have at home, because of the fact that who else do they feel safest with than mommy and daddy. And so you can't yell and scream all the time at your friends, because there would be a lot of social consequences. You can't go into the bathroom and cry yourself silly with your friends, because you're going to lose face. However, you certainly can do that with your mom and your dad, because mommy and daddy are still going to love you, hopefully, no matter what. So part of going back to what I said before, not just reacting to the observable anger, but when you learn to get underneath it with all of these different things that we're talking about right now, it will give you clues into your child's life. If your child is angry because they're having a lot of social difficulties at school, one of the most powerful techniques that you can use as a parent is role playing with them. And what does everybody know? You know, what you basically do is you could say, you know what, this is a really, really difficult situation. I understand why you're so upset. Let's brainstorm and help them come up together with a whole smorgasbord of different ideas that maybe they can use that would be comfortable for them. I actually did this recently with my 11-year-old. I noticed that for a couple of nights, she was really having a very hard time going to sleep. She was like, kind of her feet were going and she was motor mouthing. And then she said to me, I have something that I have to tell you, but I'm like really scared to tell you. So, you know, we worked it through. Okay, what was it? She had been invited to a sleepover party, you know, for the following Saturday night. And it was a bunch of five kids, the so-called cool kids. And one of the things they were going to do was they were going to see movies that she knew we found totally inappropriate. PG-13, horror movies. One was really inappropriate. And she didn't really want to go because she knew that she would be scared. She also knew, and it goes back to what I said in the beginning, parental values, being very clear what your values are. She knew that we didn't approve of that, but she felt stuck. She didn't know how to get out of it. First of all, I was thrilled that she told us, because, and we gave her a lot of positive praise for that. And then what we did was we brainstormed. We came up with a smorgasbord of ideas of how we could deal with this very delicate, sticky social situation. And we came up with the plan that she was the most comfortable with. And believe it or not, the thing that she was the most comfortable with was my calling the parent, confirming that they were indeed going to see this movie, which the parent had indeed gotten from the video store. And I said to the mom, you know what, we're going to have to take a rain check because I'm not really comfortable with her seeing these kinds of movies. And then what we did was we planned sort of a facsimile of the same kind of sleepover events that she missed out on. You know, a mommy-daughter night, I gave her a manicure, I gave her a pedicure, we got a special movie, we had a special, you know, pizza and ice cream night. And I was thrilled at how well that worked out. But that kind of role playing is extremely effective with teenagers because you're really teaching them social skills. You're teaching them problem solving because, let's face it, in life, when you grow up, you have a lot of situations that make you angry that you don't really know how to deal with. And you kind of have to be open to different possibilities. Yes?
Is it possible that a kid's nature is just more an argumentative, angry type of nature? Because one out of my four is, you could say boo, and you could say everything exactly like you say.
Right.
And still end up in an argument with sarcasm, negativity, and it goes downhill, and you go, okay.
Thank you so much for being honest to say that, because another facet in any kind of a program of dealing with anger management is you have to really know your child's temperament. We know from observing infants in a nursery, you could really see very different personality types from birth. There are some kids who are sort of mellow and they look at the ceiling and they coo. Other kids are squalling and they're red in the face and they're thrashing. So we can really see very distinct temperamental types from birth. Remember we said at the beginning, the biology of the child really factors into how they cope with the world around them. My suggestion of dealing with a child who's maybe a little bit more controlling than others is the following. Number one, try very hard not to get into counter-controlling scenes. Kind of like an army maneuver. They do A, you do B, they do C, you do D, and all we get from that is World War III. Okay? What works best with children like that is if you say, you know, this is what we expect in our house. This comes under the umbrella of what I call reasonable and expected behavior. Something that we've talked about. Again, you have a right as a parent to establish what your parental values are. I notice that sometimes you do A, B, and C. Okay, but here's what's going to happen. Whatever privileges that you have in this house, they're earned privileges. Now, that's a very, very important concept, because what that means for a lot of kids who have that kind of temperament, if they do a misbehavior and you punish them, do you think they get the point? Why not? Yeah, because what are they really saying? They get angry, because whose fault is it if they misbehaved and they get punished? Of course, it's your fault. It's not their fault. They don't take that responsibility. However, if you say to them that whether or not you get to, I don't know, watch TV, play on the computer, have your cell phone on any given day, it's based on whether your behavior met the criterion that we're setting, let me tell you, that's a whole different ballgame. Because then you are teaching them what?
Responsibility.
Responsibility and somebody, and accountability, 100%. And again, the words, they might sound like, you know, semantical differences, but they really not. Because what you're really saying is, if you want that cell phone, this is what you have to do. And then what you can do at the end of every day, you could say, okay, let's evaluate this together. And you can use the example, you know, on a job, you have like merit raises, and your boss is going to evaluate your performance on how you've done on the job, and how much money you end up getting is going to be based on your performance on the job. This is really the same kind of strategy. And you really have them say, and you can actually write down a list of the, you think of the problem behaviors. It's kind of like a more sophisticated version of behavioral contracts that are very effective with younger kids. Did you, what are some of the things that he does? Fights with his siblings?
No. I mean, he's not break the wall, slam the door, throw his coat down, come home, shower, do his own thing. But
right.
You say, so what happened today in your day? You could start off with one sentence, right, and the next sentence goes downhill. And you can't ask the question in any way, shape, or form that's correct enough. So now I do, tell me anything about you that you want to share.
Right. And by the way, one of the other strategies that you can use is you ask very specific questions that are not a yes-no answer. That's a really good strategy when you're trying to get them to, even if you say, who'd you sit with at lunch today? What'd you do in gym? Okay.
What if you get a question like, what do you think? I don't have any friends to sit with.
Okay, so what does that tell you? He's struggling and he's probably very, very anxious about the social situation, and I would suspect that he is having some difficulties, you know, with that stuff. One of the things you can say is, you know what, you're right. It is so hard being a teenager. You could say, I remember, even if sometimes if you have to make it up or embellish a little bit, I remember when I was a teenager and I went through a period of time when no one wanted to sit next to me in the cafeteria, and boy, was I bummed out. Okay, so what you're doing is you're being very empathetic. Okay, empathy goes along with the trust and the respect. Okay, what you're doing is you're identifying and you're letting him know in a very subtle way that you can connect to the feeling that you went through the things. It's a way of opening the door of communication, because communication does not start when your child turns 12. When does good communication start?
Birth.
Okay, the way that you interact, communicate, reciprocate with your child. Yes?
What happens when it's not you that's giving the negative vibe, older siblings?
Okay.
And how do you get in? And then the child said, but you weren't there for me to protect me from them.
Where do you go with that?
Okay, I have, this is a strategy that I have used that is one of the most effective, fun, simple strategies to do. Because a big complaint that I hear is what causes a lot of conflicts at home is the sibling fighting. Now, we're not going to really get into sibling rivalry per se, but I like the idea of having what I call family meetings. Again, part of the whole communication bit. You sit down and you really talk about, you know, how are we doing? You know, these are the things, you know, that concern us. And everybody gets a chance. It's not just mom and dad who say, you're doing this, you're doing this, you're driving us crazy. That's not what I mean by a family meeting. So, how do you think things are going? What are the things that we can do to work on as a family? Okay? You can bring something up in terms of the fighting. Here's the strategy. The family chooses a goal, okay? Let's say you're talking about, let's make it simple, two boys who are constantly fighting, a situation I had in my practice. So what we did was we came up with a goal of something that they really wanted to do, an outing. And again, it's not something that should cost a lot of money because that defeats the purpose. So I told them to go out and to get a vase or a jar and to also buy a bag of glass marbles, okay? Now, if you have a family where there's a lot of fighting and you're really trying to address the behavior, you probably want to get a really, really small vase because you want them to be able to see success quicker. And what you can say is every time A speaks to B respectfully, A listens, A is patient, whatever it is that you identify, I will immediately take the marble and put it in the jar. We're not going to take a marble out for negative behavior. Some people like to do that. That's not my preference because, again, I like to do positive behavior modification, and it really does work. You have it in a place where, again, you trust that they're not going to, you're going to hold on to the marbles. So you want to keep it in a safe place. But, again, the onus is on you as the parent to be consistent and to follow through with what you've said. And again, every time they do the behavior that you expect, you take the marble, you put it in the jar, and then they can reach the goal together.
Okay, could we deal with older children?
It works.
Above 20.
It, well,
don't be older.
With
there is total personality attacks.
Okay. You can really then in an adult behavior say, you know, because they're adults now at the age of 20. They're not teenagers. You could say, this behavior is not acceptable in our house. If you can't, and again, you can tell them they need to leave the table, they need to leave the room, they need to leave the house. Whatever it is, it is. But you can establish without yelling what it is that's reasonable and expected behavior. Yes? Well, you could say, you know, we could really say that at your age, having this kind of bickering would be silly too. I'm trying to give you some incentive so that we could really not have this kind of behavior. That's the kind of rejoinder that you can really give back to them.
What size jar should you have?
Again, if there's a lot of fighting, a little jar. And again, if the fighting is not so bad, but it's really bothersome to you, I would say a little medium-sized vase with kind of a nice goal that you want to get to at the end. Yes?
Tried to chart on the refrigerator with the size. My son told my daughter was getting too many. He ripped a few of her door phones. Nothing that they would respond to that they cared enough about that you could take away from them. And I told them that cell phone was, you know, by not letting go to school and all that.
Right.
And my third child, my son, wanted to go to a Sabaton in Jersey, and he said no. And he jumped down the second floor window and
right. Unfortunately, sometimes when you're talking and you know, you had a lot of courage in giving us those examples, but sometimes, and it goes back to when somebody said, when do you need professional help? When the behaviors are so severe and when there is a danger of real physical harm because they're so adamant against accepting your parental limits, then you've really got more of a serious difficulty that's going to require really more special treatment, sort of beyond the scope of what we're talking about here.
I also question when you say that it could be the tail, I understand that it could be the room, but I've never been one to be in favor of coming to leave the house.
I'm talking about when they were 20 years old. She had said that her child, her kids were 20, which is really different because that's more of an adult as opposed to a teenager. Okay.
I don't have any of them children. My youngest now, I think, is 18-year-old, 26.
Right.
They can leave the house.
Right, right.
No one's going to say they're going to come back in now because it's cooled off.
Right, right.
Yeah, no. Don't do that either.
No, no. Yes, you had a question back there?
What modification would you for family meeting, parental limits, if qualification on weekends?
Visitation on weekends. Again, that's kind of a whole different category, because as a parent, as a single parent, you're dealing with a whole lot of other very complicated issues. It's very different when you're not the custodial parent, because then you're seen more as the kind of like the cool, the fun parent, the one who's going to take the child out. And it becomes much, much harder to set the limits and to deal with the behaviors in a positive and proactive way. The best that I could offer is to hope that you have good enough communication with their mother so you can come up with a plan together to really talk about how you're going to address some of the behaviors that are really not acceptable as a parent. Now, that leads me to what I thought you were going to say before, which is what happens when you have parents who have totally different views on how to discipline, how to talk to the child. A lot of times, parents, you know, let's face it, as I said at the very, very beginning, as parents, you come from your own background. You have your own experiences with your child. And sometimes, as a parent, you're not going to see eye to eye. The biggest complaint is one believes in corporal punishment, one is violently against corporal punishment. One is more lenient, one is more authoritarian. There's a lot of ways to say no. There's a difference between saying, no, you can't do that. And there's a difference between saying, you know, I know that you'd really like to do that, but I'm not comfortable with it, and I'm afraid I can't say yes. A world of difference with the same end result. And again, my advice as parents is you have to work on that communication, not just with your child, but again with the spouse, not in front of the children, because that is a recipe for disaster, because kids are very smart. And if they know that you're butting heads and you're at odds with each other, they're very good at what we call splitting, playing mommy-daddy games. Dad, can I have $20? Sure, here we go. And then going to mom asking for the same, and then starting a real quarrel and an argument between parents. It's your obligation, very, very strong word, it's an obligation as a parent to at least work at compromising, to getting pretty much on the same page in terms of how you're going to deal with these kinds of issues. That's why, again, going back to the family meetings, communicating, listening, respecting your way is not necessarily the only right way to do something is extremely important. I know we only have another minute, so what I'd like to do is end with the following analogy. This is my philosophy on being a parent. Being a child in this day and age is a very, very tough thing. The world, and we were schmoozing a little bit at the beginning, I think the world is kind of a scary place for a lot of kids. There's a lot of dangers out there because of our information superhighway. So your job as parents is to work at loving your children, but at the same time, allowing them to do what they need to do as teenagers to grow up healthy, which is to sprout their wings and to fly away, but to be able to come back to home. And my analogy for that is kind of like holding with open arms. Because if you're there and you're receptive and you're accessible and you treat your child with respect, they will come to you to give you that hug. But if you hold them so tightly that you squash them and you smother them and you suppress their need, their developmental need to be independent and to grow up, then they will be forced to either be tied to your apron strings for the rest of your natural life and their natural life, or they'll be forced to rebel. Because either way, that thrust and that need to be independent is very much a biological thing and something that we also all had to go through. So I hope that you've enjoyed this. I hope that you've learned something. And again, you can read what's in the book.
Ladies and gentlemen.